All right, good morning, everyone. It is 10:05 a.m. on Friday, December 11th, 2020. This is a light mitigation technology stakeholder discussion. I'm Commissioner Brian Krosches, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman?
I don't have any opening comments either, except for to tell our guests. I'm just back here so I can see them on the screen as opposed to the other table and having my back turned to them. So that's why I'm here.
All right, and the portfolio holder on this would be Commissioner Fedorchak, so I'm going to turn it over.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate this opportunity to take another look at this and get a kind of a status report on how the technology is working in the existing areas where it has been employed, and just have a discussion with the industry about the use of this technology and how to make it work the best. We had hoped to also have a demonstration with the leadership of the LIDS technology. I don't know if that is happening or not. Brian, did we ever get a hold of Shepard, Mr. Shepard?
Jack and Dredd called him yesterday, and I don't think we got a response after that.
Okay. So that we might have to reschedule that one for a later date. So let's see here. A number of folks have responded that. What I'd hoped to have a discussion on today primarily is really evaluating the facilities that have the light mitigating technology deployed. How is it working? What are the rates of the lights being off versus on? And then a discussion with staff and my colleagues regarding the effectiveness of this technology. I noticed on the list of folks that have reached out to us, I think, there are others who want to talk that maybe don't have the technology. They aren't active facilities in North Dakota using the technology. And so to that extent, I would assume they just want to talk about the the light mitigating technology in general, which we are open to that comment as well. We do have some active requests out there on four cases requesting us to consider extensions, et cetera. We don't want to get into those requests now, nor do we want to field additional requests from facilities for extensions. That would be a separate process through the commission. You can let us know and work with our staff, and we'll go from there. So I don't want to get into case-specific requests for retrofitting existing facilities and asking for extensions on the deadline for that. That would not be appropriate for this work session. All right. So with that, I think, Brian, did you have in mind going through the order listed here in the email you sent me?
Yes.
Okay. And I think that's relating to people's time and their schedules. So the first person is Barag Becker Burke from Aurora Wind. And so if we have Barag on the phone.
Good morning, Commissioner. This is Georg Beckberg. I'm on the line.
Oh, Georg. Okay, sorry. That makes more sense. We've talked before. There's a typo in the email.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Sorry, I butchered your name. Georg, yes. Welcome. Glad to have you. And did you file anything in writing with us as it relates to what you're going to talk about today?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, we'll just take notes, and maybe we can follow up with that if necessary. All righty. Thank you so much. And please remind us of your company's investments, what facilities you have here, and what you want to talk about today.
Yeah. So good morning, everyone. My name is Georg Backberg. I'm calling in on behalf of Enel Green Power. We have the Aurora Wind Farm and the Lindau Wind Farm. Lindau Wind Farm being an operating asset, the Aurora Wind Farm under final construction stages. I wanted to provide a brief update on where we stand with the our radar system and give you an overview. We have the radar tower installed and the radar system installed. We are using one system that will serve both wind farms because they're close together. We had delays in the tower installation because we encountered, due to COVID, we encountered permitting delays on the FCC side for so that had to led to a much later installation of the tower itself. We are now in the process of energizing the tower and powering up the system. Once that is powered up, it needs to go through very detailed communication checks and fiber connectivity checks. That will take about 1 to 2 weeks. Depending on how well that works, we'll either have the system operating around the holidays or just very early in January, in case we're going past the holidays there with the checks. But we're essentially in final stages. The FAA lights are still being mounted on some of the turbines. On Lindau, they're all complete. So by latest and early January, we have the system operational.
Okay, and so for the Aurora system, and I don't really want to get into the details of compliance here. So, what are you finding so far? I think that's the compliance stuff is a separate issue that we can talk about with staff. How you don't have the system operating yet, so you don't really have any experience with it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, we're trying to energize it for the first time tomorrow, so it's not operating at this moment.
Okay. So how is your permitting process and that sort of thing with the FCC and
Challenge we had on the FCC side was that you need two permits from the FCC. You need to have the radar tower construction permit from the FCC. And then, unfortunately, I don't know the exact name, but then there's a radio license permit. The first portion, the construction permit, encountered the most delays because it involves tribal consultations. And a lot of the tribes have closed their offices due to the COVID crisis and that delayed the permitting process. So we had to wait until offices reopened later in late summer, and when then the process of consultation could start with 30 days response time, etc. So that had delayed our permit, which we initially wanted to have in early August. It had delayed it to late October. So in henceforth, we couldn't start with the construction of the radar equipment. And that was one noticeable impact that we had. The radio operating permit, and on the other half, went pretty quickly.
Okay, very good. Do you guys have any questions for Georg?
I do.
Randy has a question for you.
I just want to clarify that I understood right, that the light mitigation technology is going to be one unit, and so for both Aurora and Lindau, when it's set off by an aircraft, the lights will all be on, and when it's not, they will all be off for both wind farms. They'll work together, correct?
That is correct.
And can you refresh me? And I don't need a precise number, but about what would be the farthest would be the distance between the farthest apart towers of those two wind farms?
I do not have a good number for you there, unfortunately. The radar tower sits in the middle between the two projects, and it can cover the whole area of both wind farms. But we easily have an expansion about 20 miles north, south, and east, west.
So it's less than 40 then?
To my understanding, yes, but I haven't done the exact measurements.
If you could get us an approximation of that, I'd appreciate it. No urgency to it. I'm just trying to have it more clear in my mind. But thanks for all the other information.
You're welcome.
All right. Very good, Georg. Thank you. Appreciate your update. The next person on the list is an update from Chris Kozlowski, and this is regarding all of the NextEra projects, of which there are four actively using the system. And they did file with us, which Brian just distributed to everybody, an updated response that kind of outlines some of their usage and the rates. So that's very helpful. So Chris, if you're here, there you are. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
You can go ahead and lead us in the discussion of your experiences.
Thank you very much. Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us this morning. Can everyone hear me okay? I'm on my phone audio. I just want to make sure.
You sound good. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Yep, as you mentioned, we have ABLS installations at four operating sites. It's actually three installations. the Brady 1 and 2 cluster operates under one aircraft detection lighting system. But as you all know, this is a new technology, and we appreciate North Dakota being the leader in championing the installation of the wind turbine lighting mitigation technology. And we particularly appreciate the Commission's support as we work through the technical application of the ABLS system at our projects. In our filings, you know, I think everyone would agree that safety is the number one priority as we apply this new technology at the wind site. And, you know, as we mentioned, we had three installations at four wind projects in North Dakota that all went operational earlier this year. So Brady 1 and 2, Emmons, Logan, and then Oliver 3 have the ABLS systems up and running at the projects. And we are on target to install ABLS at all of the other required sites by the end of 2021. So, you know, we will update the commission if anything comes up or if there's any hiccups, but as you know, per our planning and the guidelines of the regulations, we should be on target there. You know, I think part of the confusion around some of these installations is, you know, where you turn it on, but the lights are, you turn on the ABLS system, but the lights still remain on, and there's several reasons for that. And our understanding and operational experience with this technology continues to evolve, and we continue to monitor the performance of ABLS at our sites with the goal of safety top of mind, but also trying to minimize the time the lights are on at our facilities. And so, to that end, we work closely with our technology provider, which is DTEC, to optimize the ABLS installations across these projects, but there is a level of customization that's required at each site. And so in addition to aircraft activity, turbine lights at the wind facilities are triggered for a variety of reasons, including weather, bird avian activity, particularly during the migratory season, agriculture activity, road traffic, and system testing and maintenance. And through our work with DTEC to optimize these installations, we've been implementing filters and masking features over the last year, which have reduced the lights on at our sites from approximately 60% of the time in the early stages of 2020 to less than 20% of the time later in the year. And we're getting great results more recently, even with the lights being off up to 90% of the time. Recently, though, in particularly in the months of October and November, the lights did increase due to seasonal bird migration. Mm-hmm. But we are working closely with DTEC to develop and implement migratory suppression algorithms to address this issue. Is still in the works. It's being currently implemented as we speak at Emmons Logan, and we anticipate that to be completed and implemented during this, prior to and during the spring migratory season. And as always, we'll continue to work closely with our technology provider to safely optimize the ADLS installations and reduce lights on time whenever possible. And we share the goal of making this an effective system for all stakeholders involved.
Very good. Chris, tell me, what do you think is a reasonable goal, and will it likely be easier in the winter when there's less agriculture activity in terms of tractors, et cetera, there's less bird migration? Would it be reasonable to expect that the technology would work best in the winter?
I don't know if I have a specific, I don't know that I can answer that question, that it's going to be best at a certain time period. I think the logic that you're laying out makes sense to me. One concern with saying yes, it's going to be perfect in the winter is there's just more hours of darkness during the winter months. And so that would be the caveat I would make. Given the fact that less other instances of activity that could trigger the lights on would likely be occurring, less activity occurring during the winter, the lights should be on less of the time. And as I mentioned, I think I've been monitoring it pretty closely over the last several weeks. And we've been achieving levels, of 90% of the time having the lights off. I think it's important to keep in mind that weather could affect that, and other instances where there could be instances in the winter where lights are triggered as well for reasons other than just specifically aircraft.
Sure. So talk a little bit about the weather as it relates to triggering in the use of this system.
Right. So weather, if weather is going to affect the radar system at all, and could, where the weather could be mistaken or affect the effectiveness of the radars, then the lights are trained to be on during those periods so that, just as a safety precaution.
So how does weather affect radars, I guess, to go down a little bit deeper? Is it fog, or I guess I'm not aware of how weather affects the functioning of radars?
I think that, I'm not on the technical side of that, so I can follow up with you on that and get you a better answer.
Sounds great. And what are the other, can you go through the list? I appreciated your list, but the list of the other kind of trigger events?
Yeah, so the main ones that we've seen over the last year have been road traffic and agricultural activity earlier in the year. And one of the reasons that occurs is because, these aren't perfectly flat areas. And in addition, in particularly agricultural areas, planes and/or helicopters could be flying at low level altitudes. So you can't just specifically say only activity over a certain height. When you think about crop dusters and other activity that could be occurring in these agricultural areas, and so those filters to mask those features were applied over the portfolio of operating projects where ADLS is installed, I think in August. And if you look at the report that we filed, the update we filed, I think most recently in November, shows a drastic reduction in lights on time after that masking feature was applied to particularly carve out agricultural activity. Mm-hmm. There is an uptick, unfortunately, during October and November, and that's primarily due to the bird migration. So I think really those four triggers are in addition to the aircraft. So road traffic, agricultural activity, bird activity, particularly during migratory seasons, and then weather.
Okay. And are there others just they turn on and you're not really sure why?
Not to my knowledge. You know, I can get back to you if there's been kind of false negatives that we haven't been able to specifically track down.
Okay.
So I'll take that as a follow-up, but not to a large extent. I think there can be, you know, an outage at the site that could, the lights would go on at that time if there's any kind of disruption from a systemic, you know, from a system standpoint. But those have really been minimal. I can think of one instance where I believe there was an outage at Edmonds Logan, where the lights were triggered for, I want to say about a 24-hour period, but I'm not, you know, don't hold me to that. But that's kind of what we've seen. There is also system testing that occurs every night, where the lights need to be on for a short period just to make sure that everything's functioning appropriately. But other than that, you know, I would have to follow up on additional false positives, but I don't think I've seen a systemic problem related to that.
Okay, great. And so the filters that you're talking about when we look at, say, just Brady Wind 1 and 2, in January, February, March, April, May, kind of pre lots of agriculture activity, we're looking at high 30s to 40%. They're off. And then, let's see, off, on. The lights are off. Okay, so then they start coming on a lot more because of the agriculture traffic. 81% of the time they're okay, now I'm confused. It looks like they're off a lot in August and September. So where's the filter that you
Yeah, so that I think we called it the tractor filter, at least internally here when we're working with DTEC. And that tractor filter, I don't have the specific date that it was applied. August 11th comes to mind. But I think it was kind of the first half of August when that tractor filter was applied. And I think that's where you see the biggest reduction in lights on time.
Okay, so from 30% in July to 18%, they're on. Okay, I got it. And then it goes up again in October. All right.
Yeah, and that's really due to the bird migration. You know, I don't have all the dates in front of me, but I want to say October 10th was when we started seeing the bird migration activity. And it's not a constant activity, right? It kind of ebbs and flows as weather patterns change. But that the bird migration has been the main culprit for triggering lights during October and November. And as that has waned, we've seen the lights on time, you know, reduced to very low levels again.
Okay, so in September, so far, of the stuff you've reported, September showed the smallest percentage of lights on time of about 13%, so 87% of the time they were off in September at Brady 1 and 2.
Yes.
Okay, and does that include the time that you're on for testing? Is that included in the lights on time?
I will clarify, but I believe the answer to that is yes. I believe in the data we reported was a simple, if the lights were on, it got captured by that percentage.
Okay, good. All right. Well, Brian and Randy, you guys want to jump in with questions for Chris?
I have a couple questions. Chris, I think you had mentioned earlier that you're not the technical expert on this these systems necessarily, or maybe I misheard that. So, but if that's the case, these questions might not be answerable right now. But do you know how?
I'll do my best.
Okay. The radar system, you know, when I think of radar systems detecting aircraft, I think of air traffic control systems, which are highly sophisticated systems, I would imagine, you know, for public safety reasons. Do you know how these systems would compare? Are these like just a basic 101 type radar system and not nearly as sophisticated, or is that not accurate?
I would be making a guess to try and answer that question to kind of give you an analogy, but let us get with our technology provider, and I think we can give you a better answer to that question.
Okay, and then maybe this, then I'm making another assumption, the speed of the farm machinery filter, is that just based on speed of travel, or is it more in proximity to or altitude related?
I think there's a number of different aspects to the activity that's triggering the light that is used to filter out that activity. It is not just speed, because if you think about a helicopter, for example, right, that could mimic you know, the speed doesn't necessarily have to be going at 100 miles an hour to be in the air and aloft. And so I think it has to do with the patterns, but it takes time to customize the systems and to be able to safely filter out activity that is deemed not to be aircraft activity. But that being said, you know, I'll take that back to our technology provider and get you a better answer. So that'll help you think about how that work gets done.
Okay. And then the last one, what is the goal in terms of the percentage of lights on time? I don't know if I've heard one in the past, and maybe there is one and I didn't remember it. Or
because there's several reasons why lights can be triggered on, I don't think it's, you know, I don't know that there's a specific goal in mind. It's really to minimize, you know, safely minimize the amount of time that lights are on. And even in terms of what the goal should be, right, over what period are you trying to craft a goal? Because the lights could be on in a particular night if there's inclement weather, triggering those lights, you know, 100% of the time that the storm's coming through. And so I don't think we're targeting a specific goal. I think the way we think about it is to safely minimize the time the lights are on when we can filter out activity known not to be aircraft.
Okay.
That seems consistent with how we've talked about it.
Yeah.
It's hard to set a specific goal because it's all conditional.
I know it's, yeah.
As little as possible.
I understand that, but I think the public, you know, they're wondering, well, how often will they be on? And it does become somewhat of a vague answer to tell them as little as possible, but there will be times that they're on, and that's the reality. But I'm just wondering, in terms of the refinements that are made to the systems as they're in operation and more is known about how to make the adjustments, just curious if it's going to be 10-15% of the time, generally speaking, once everything is settled in and operating. But if it can't be answered, I guess it can't be answered at this time.
Yeah, I don't think I can give you a better answer right now.
Okay, thanks.
Randy, did you have some questions?
I do, and first thing I just weigh in on that. I think a specific goal might be risky, because if you set the goal at say X percent of the time, but then for some reason over the course of a month or a longer period of time, air traffic picks up. We certainly want them on more than that if there's more air traffic. So, but I think, too, just a minimal amount that's necessary to provide proper safety is what we need to shoot for. My questions, and this first part, we've been provided before, so I could dig it up, but maybe you just know off the top of your head because I don't recall the answers. Was there a height at about which if aircraft is lower than that, it should turn the lights on, and if it's higher than that, it shouldn't impact the lights. Do you recall what that is? And then also how far away from the detection system?
Let me follow up on that. Specifically with how far away, I know that we have a cushion there. So I think the FAA requires, and I'm trying to dig through my notes quickly on the fly. So give me 1 second. I know that we have a 3.5 nautical mile boundary that if, you know, if something detected within that boundary from the, you know, a target comes in that boundary, that the lights will be triggered. From a height perspective, I have a number in my head, but I'm not 100% sure that it's right, so let me follow up on that specifically.
Okay.
It'll just be a fact.
And then my
I think in our filing, it looks like it was 2,500 feet or below over the wind facility that triggers the lights. So we can, in our follow-up, we'll include that those two data points heightened.
And then my next might be a little harder. So I know there's various ways of gathering the statistics, and I'm wondering if these are based on something where you have a continuous monitoring system with a lot of precision, or is this some random times where you've tested it? And bottom line here, I'm wondering what confidence you have in these statistics, because I got to tell you, one of these wind farms, now that the days are shorter, I drive by pretty regularly in the evening hours. And when I drive by, it's in sight for around a half hour, and I would say about a third of that half hour they're in sight, and other times I would be kind of behind a hill or something like that. And frankly, in the last couple months, I've never seen them off yet. And so it's been discouraging, but now I look at your statistics, and frankly, I find them pretty encouraging. So I don't know whether to believe the statistics or my own eyes.
Randy, can you give...
Okay, well...
Tell them which one you think it is.
It's Oliver Wind is the one that I drive by.
But just Oliver Wind 3.
Oh, you're right.
And you're sure it's just Oliver 3 that you're looking at? Because I think I'd like the company to kind of re-provide a map or whatever of the entire Oliver project and show us which one's Oliver 3 is. So we can be looking in the right place. Because I have the same concerns, but then it dawned on me that maybe I'm not looking at Oliver 3. Maybe I'm looking at Oliver 1 and 2.
Well, and I'll just add to that so you can answer it all together, Chris. I'm basing this on my belief that Oliver 1 and 2 are all up north of Highway 25, so north of a line that would parallel the city of Center. And I don't think I'm seeing those lights from the interstate. But maybe I'm wrong. So that can be part of the equation here. And then that the stuff that's south of Center and closer to the interstate would all be Oliver 3. That's how I'm understanding it.
So I don't know those streets specifically, unfortunately. But I think what would be best is if we did follow up with a map of those facilities and turbine specifics, and we can tell you which ones the ADLS is functioning on or not. And maybe that'll help clarify the situation.
Perfect.
So what? No, could you clarify though your level of confidence in these numbers? Is this something where an hour or a couple moments during each evening you run a test of them to see, or is this a continuing monitoring system that's keeping careful statistics, or how did you get these numbers, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, so the statistics are based on it's the data throughout the time period. So there's no omissions, and it's not simply, you know, I know this is what you're saying, it's not cherry picked or a sampling. It's the whole data set that we're looking at, and it's continuously monitored throughout time.
Okay, thanks. And sampling was the good word that I should have used too, because I didn't mean to imply cherry picked.
It came to me second after I used the word that I shouldn't have used. But yeah, it's not a sampling statistic. It's a continuous data set that we're looking at.
Okay, thanks a lot, Chris.
I do have another question. I'm just looking at the handout for the first time, so it could be. We just received it, I think, just prior to walking in the door or after we had sat down. But so maybe it's embedded in here, and I just haven't found it yet. But is there a breakdown in terms of when the lights are on, how it breaks down with various events? You know, this, at say, for Brady Wind, in November through the 1st through the 15th is at 22.24%, and then the breakdown underneath that number would be 5% due to testing at night, 3% bird migration. Are there any numbers, figures?
So let me get back with our technology provider, because we're taking the data directly from them. I think it's a little bit of a labor-intensive task to split the time between what the various triggers are, but we could likely give you at least some indication there. But let me follow up and see what we can provide on that.
Yeah, and that might help get me to what I was asking earlier, and I use the word goal, and that, you know, I don't want to send people running over the hill with their hair on fire by saying goal. Public safety is important, obviously. But I'm just trying to get a better handle on what are things that you could reasonably assume with corrections will probably go away, and if they did, without any impact to public safety, that 22% might have been 14% otherwise. It's going to be an approximation, and I'm just curious.
Okay. Well, we will we'll follow up and see if we can do any between different triggers on the data that's been provided.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
Say, Chris, along those lines, you were talking earlier about a filter that would take away some of the triggers of the agriculture activity, and one of them that you suggested is the crop dusters. I'm assuming you maybe misspoke. Those would always trigger the lights to be on, right? We want the lights to be on when there's planes flying around the facilities. I mean, I know they're not flying
wrong
at night usually
apologize.
Anyway.
I think that was my example for saying that you couldn't necessarily just carve out things below a certain altitude, because helicopters and or crop dusters could be flying at those levels.
Okay.
And so certainly we would want those activities to trigger the lights on. So it's not just you can look at over a certain height and be done, because there's, you know, there are examples of aircraft activity that could be below those levels.
Sure. Understood. Very good.
On that point, certainly, I get your point on the helicopters. That is a very serious point. I've not usually seen too many crop dusters working in the dark.
No.
So
I hope not.
Not going to be a big factor here.
But any plane flying would always trigger the lights, I guess, is the main point. Any aircraft
triggers
the lights to be on. That would be daredevil crop dusters. Performance crop dusters. Oh, man. All right, let's see. So there's seems to be a better result, or the light system seems to be more effectively off in Brady and then Oliver 3 and Emmons Logan. Are there certain triggers there that are just going to always be harder to adjust for, like maybe aircraft patterns that are going to always trigger the lights to come on more often than perhaps out in Brady, the Brady area? And if you don't know that question offhand, that might be another good thing to follow back up with us.
Yeah, let me follow up. I mean, I don't know that we can. I mean, because if you look at different periods, right? If you look at September, and I believe I'm looking at the same data you are that we mm-hmm. provided. You know, you're at 9.4% in September for Emmons Logan.
Yeah.
And you're at 13% for Brady. And so, I think, you know, maybe part of the issue with the data we provided was to the second decimal, which implies, you know, a certain level of, you know, very specific fine tuning that can be done. You know, I would think about these percentages more in a range, right, as opposed to the very specific number. So if you're at 25 or 30%, I don't know that there's a huge difference there in terms of the performance. It could just be specifics that happened at a particular site during that month versus not having, you know, not happening at another site. But that being said, I will certainly be, you know, follow up if there's certain challenges at, you know, at particular sites that could limit the optimization.
That would be great. And I think that's an important thing for us to be able to share with the public too, so their expectations are accurate, or more accurate. Chris, this is really great information, and I just want to emphasize, like, we have less than a year's experience with this technology and already have learned a lot. I'm sure you guys have, and we have too. So I want to express appreciation for NextEra's willingness to be on the front on this issue, dating way back to when we first permitted Brady 1 and 2, and NextEra said, yeah, we'll tackle this. And it's really an important piece for the industry, I believe, to be the best possible neighbor it can be and to minimize your impacts in places that are rural and appreciate dark night skies and appreciate the, you know, as much of the rural nature that can be preserved during development as possible. So that's great, and I think the takeaways are we're, you know, you're constantly working to improve the rate of effectiveness in terms of the lights being on as least as possible to protect public safety, and that's a work in progress, and we'll continue to get better at that. I'd like to know if you could give us a list of the facilities that you guys operate that will be coming on board in the next year with this product, ADLS.
Sure. So I appreciate those words. I mean, just to go back to your first point, you know, North Dakota really is on the leading edge of implementing this. It is a new technology, and all of our experience is primarily in the North Dakota state with ADLS at this time. And so it is, you know, we are on the learning curve right now to train these systems and be able to operate them optimally. That being said, I know Northern Divide is a project that's coming online later this month is the goal. And so we'll have ADLS installed at COD on that project. I believe ADLS is getting installed at the Ashtabula and Langley clusters as well, and all of that is on target for the end of 21. I don't, you know, we're still working through everything, so I don't have a specific date to give you, you know, right now, but we will certainly be in compliance on those projects. And then I would need to follow up to understand that there's other projects that are getting it installed over the next year.
Okay, very good. As always, please keep in touch with us if you anticipate delays or have any barriers along the way. The sooner we know, the better on those types of things. If you're getting held up by the, you know, permitting or whatever it is, don't wait until a couple weeks before the deadline and then say, oh, we've been held up for the last 3 months. So that just helps everybody kind of have appropriate expectations.
Yeah, we will certainly do that.
Very good. I'm going to let... We did invite the media to participate in this because part of our goal here is to educate the public on how these systems are working and what sorts of expectations we can should have for their effectiveness. So I'm going to go ahead and let our resident reporter who's been following this from the Bismarck Tribune, Amy Sisk, ask questions if she has any of you, since you really are kind of the spokesperson for the company that has most of the active systems up and running. So, Amy, would you like to ask any questions?
Hi there. Thank you. I don't have a ton. I think the commissioners asked a lot of what I was curious about. But I am curious if you've been hearing from landowners who have wind turbines on their land. You know, have you been hearing, I guess, what's been the feedback from them about how the systems have been working?
To my knowledge, I don't know that we've heard from specific landowners on the lighting systems.
Okay, that's all right.
You know, I'm glad Amy mentioned that because it was a question that I knew I had one thing I wanted to ask and I forgot it. But that would be, I think it would be helpful for you guys to reach out to some of your landowners, especially the people who you have easements with, so you can easily, you have their contact information, et cetera, and get feedback from them on how they feel it's functioning. And then if you'd be willing to share that with us the next time, I think that would be, you know, the kind of give us the full picture from the folks who are living with this, who we're hoping are noticing a difference. Does that seem reasonable, Chris?
Okay. Yeah, I think we can work on that.
Very good. Okay. Any other questions?
I don't. Thanks, though, Chris. Appreciate
yeah.
It.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your update.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Okay, let's see here. I got to pull up the list. So next is Darren Schottler from Excel. Okay.
Commissioner, this is Dave Cedarquist. We've had a little change in the plans this morning. Darren is unable to be here, so I'll be starting things off for Excel Energy.
Very good. We recognize your voice, Dave, and I know how to say your name. So that's all good. So go ahead.
Sure. So what we're going to do is I'm going to provide kind of a high-level update of our ADLS system at the Foxtail plant, but I also have with me today three Xcel Energy colleagues who work a lot more closely with our wind facilities, and they can address any more specific questions you have. James Zyduck is Director of Renewable Plant Operations with the company. And then Jamie Orrick is our Senior Operations Manager. He lives in Devil's Lake, and he actually oversees the operations of all of our North Dakota wind farms. And then with him are also in his organization is Chris Chafee, who's our Foxtail Operations Manager. So if there are specific questions, I'll probably be asking them to fill in. And I'd like to start just by sort of echoing Nextera's comments regarding North Dakota's leadership in the use of this light mitigating technology. Xcel Energy is very committed to, you know, doing everything that we can to minimize the lighting of our facilities during the dark skies, and you know, being, as the commissioner says, being a good neighbor in the area. So I just wanted to echo those comments. We own and operate actually three projects in North Dakota: the Border Winds facility, 150 megawatts, the 200 megawatt Courtenay facility near Jamestown, and then of course Foxtail. And we have purchase agreements for another 112 megawatts of wind generated power in North Dakota as well. So with respect to Foxtail, that facility went into operation in December of 2019. It's, as you probably know, our first application of light mitigating technology on any of our wind farms. So we're learning. Our vendor, our ADLS vendor, is learning as well to some degree. We engaged Terma as our ADLS vendor, and they're a firm out of Denmark. They have experience with radar detection systems, primarily in military installations. In fact, I understand that they are a preferred vendor of the Department of Defense. So the Foxtail ADLS became operational in April of this year. We did run into some harsh cold weather conditions, which delayed our progress in installing that system. And actually, it required Terma to design and install, for the first time in their experience, a heated workspace at the top of the radar tower so that the wiring could be completed. But it did delay us. Today, the ADLS continues to operate. However, there are a couple of issues that we are working on diligently with Terma to improve the performance of this system. First of all, consistent with some of the comments that we've already been hearing, the lights at Foxtail are activated more often than we had anticipated. And so we are working with Terma to improve that performance. The primary cause, again, of the unintended light activation is that on occasion, these migrating bird flocks can actually mimic what they call the radar signature of aircraft, to the point that the ADLS system either recognizes the flock as an aircraft in error, or it has enough uncertainty about what it is detecting to default to the activation of the lights system. So I just sort of think it should be noted at this time that the primary objective of the ADLS and the lighting system in general is to ensure that there's the safety of the aircraft entering the vicinity of Foxtail in this case. And if there is an uncertainty event, which is what Terma calls them, the system is going to err on the side of caution and it's going to trigger the tower light. So, but the good news here is that Terma recognizes the issue, and they're very committed to making the improvements that are needed so that the existence of the dark skies is optimized. And as we speak here, they are continuing to gather data on the system. They're making adjustments to the software algorithms, and they're developing other filtering, and I think we heard the term masking protocols to help avoid having the non-aircraft events activate the ADLS. So that's kind of where we are with that. Continuing to work on it. The second issue that I want to bring to your attention has to do with performance tracking and reporting, or to be frank, the lack thereof to date. Most recently, now Terma has installed an automated performance reporting tool and for the Foxtail facility, and we are now working on determining how to securely transfer this information to us at Xcel so that we'll be able to track and monitor the mitigation activity at Foxtail. And, you know, the objective there is to be able to respond to some of the questions that you've had in the past about performance. We have the same questions, you know, regarding how often are the lights being mitigated? How is the system performing? And so this reporting is something we've been looking forward to. Our understanding is that Terma now should they be running other ADLS systems on future plants, that they will be providing on those plants as well. So I guess, you know, we have a good level of confidence that working in concert with Terma, that we are making progress in working out the bugs in the system. Again, our goal is having a system that will really only activate when there are aircraft events, not some of these other sort of uncertainty events. So I guess at this time, that's pretty much the overall view of where we're at with Foxtail, and I'd open it up to any questions, more specific questions you may have.
Thank you, Dave. When do you anticipate being able to provide an update on kind of the performance? I think you responded to our request back in earlier this fall, and then it would be good to have an update on what your experience has been since then, and maybe again after Terma installs or implements some of these more specific filtering devices.
Yeah, we actually don't have a solid date from Terma on, you know, when that system will be fully operational and we'll be getting the reports in a format that, you know, is friendly, which is another thing that they're also working on. I don't know, James or Jamie, if you guys have any comments on a timeline. I guess I would be hopeful that, you know, by end of first quarter in 2021, we're looking at reports.
Yeah, Dave, this is Jim Zydek. I have not seen an update either on the timeline. I would concur that our expectation to see something by the end of first quarter.
Do they have the ability to just provide current numbers, you know, as of, you know, for the fall operation? Can they just provide that now and then another update or in the near future?
You know, my understanding, Commissioner, is that it's extremely labor intensive to look at the types of raw data that they have. I think that they are in the midst of taking that data and writing the programs they need to put it into, like I referred to earlier, friendly reports. They've shown us some templates for what those reports can look like and for us to react to. Are we showing you the right information? The reports would be daily, and they would also accumulate for weekly and monthly time periods as well. So I guess the short answer is it's just extremely hard to pull the data now, given the sort of the raw nature that they have it in.
Okay. I would just mention that this is likely to be a subject of interest during the legislative session, so you may want to push them a bit to get an update earlier than the end of the first quarter, you know, like January, February, if you can get some updated operational data. That
sure
may be helpful for the discussion.
So noted. Thank you, Commissioner.
Would you be able to, you or James, Jamie, or Chris, provide kind of a rough estimate of the on versus off performance at Foxtail?
This is Jamie Warnock. I'll defer that one to Chris Chafee if you can. He's usually the one looking at it on a daily. Chris, are you there? I believe I would say during the bird migration, it was probably, I would say 50-50 maybe. And then after the bird migration, it's dropped off significantly, probably, you know, 20% of the time.
Okay.
Maybe 15.
All right. That's helpful. I would make the same request of you guys that I made of NextEra, and that is if you could reach out to your easement holders and ask them a few questions about what their experience with the light mitigating is, if they notice it, if they think it's effective, you know, just what they're thinking so far, so we can get a feel from the user's standpoint.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense, Commissioner, and we'll follow up on that.
Great, thank you. So, Randy, Brian, do you guys have any questions on Foxtail?
No, I don't.
Okay, Brian doesn't. Randy, any questions for these guys?
Not really questions, but I will say I believe these statistics that NextEra provided will be docketed in the cases for those four facilities. And, I mean, I've only had them for just the exact time of this work session. But in just a review, when you were talking about how to gather the information and make it presentable and useful, I thought this by the month is actually a pretty good way because, you know, I look at this and, you know, you can see the seasonality of migration periods. Of course, this has some other changes as they were fine-tuning a whole new technology here. But, and then, you know, when there's a situation where something maybe has to be worked on for a few days and so on, those nights they flash all the time, it could be highlighted why that month had a little bit of an increase because of a few nights of continuous running or something. But I just thought this monthly report is, I think, my initial thought is that was pretty useful.
Thanks, Commissioner. That's great input.
I agree. I think that's a good template. And one thing I would also add is in working with Terma, if they can identify any specific unique triggering events that this area is always going to have that will, you know, affect the operation of the system, that would be helpful to know as well.
Thank you.
All right.
And wait. Oh,
go ahead, Randy.
Dave, can you confirm or deny the rumor that you've been lobbying the Game and Fish Department for higher bag limits on waterfowl?
I know nothing about that, Commissioner.
Okay, never mind.
Now you see why
I'm trying to get me. You're trying to throw me into a giggle attack, too, or what?
Let's not go there.
Okay.
Now you know why. All right. I think that thank you for bringing together a great team. If anybody has information you'd like to share, any of your experts on the line, we'd be happy to hear your experiences, your thoughts, ideas on the use of the system and your hopes for it. So I just open it up to any of your team, Dave. If they're dying to speak.
This is Jamie Orak again. I would say that you know, our hopes is that we limit it to just aircraft that is getting more and more. You know, they're getting the ability more and more as they refine their technologies, things like that. It's definitely going to take some time, and they've expressed that to us that it'll take time to do this. And we just want to, you know, work with them as much as possible and push them to kind of have the leading edge in you know, getting a breakthrough on this. So,
thanks for that, Jamie. Jamie, how do you spell your last name?
O-R-R-O-C-K.
And you're the Senior Operations Manager for all of Xcel's wind farms in North Dakota?
That's correct.
Okay. And Can you tell me, Jamie, where does Terma, there, are they overseas? I think Dave said that they were from Holland or something. Denmark?
Denmark company, yeah.
And so are there operations folks working remotely and doing all their work remotely with this?
They are. That was kind of more the difficulty during the whole COVID thing when they locked down travel, things like that. It was difficult for them to be able to come troubleshoot locally.
Do they need to troubleshoot locally, or are they doing that now, or how does that work? Have they trained your staff to do that?
During the initial, setup of this system and, working through the bugs, things like that, we had a UPS that had failed that needed to be changed out, so they had to come over and help with replacement of that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we try to do as much troubleshooting locally as possible with them on the phone. That's another, timing as well gets kind of in the way with the time zone difference. But sure. Most of the troubleshooting now is local or is remotely. They're able to remote in and analyze the data, things like that.
Okay.
As we need them to.
Okay. And I'm going to turn it over to Amy Siss from the Bismarck Tribune, who's participating too. We wanted to make this available for the media to get their questions answered too. So she's got a couple questions.
Yeah, I just had one real quick. I was just curious, to a person who's driving by or somebody who lives in the area, what do these ADLS systems look like? I gather that there's some sort of a tower. What all is a part of it?
So the system is basically a tower. It's very similar to, I don't know if you've seen, it's a smaller version, obviously, but when you drive by an airport and you see that turret that's turning in the air, it looks kind of like a T for, and it turns in 360 degrees. We just have a smaller version of that, and it's about 60 meters up in the air, and that's about it. Other than that, it's the rest of it is in the FAA lights and using fiber optics to communicate with the towers.
And you guys don't have this operating in any of your other states in your operations?
We just were recently engaged in purchasing a site that does have it, but the purchase has not gone through yet. So this is our first one.
And which state is that?
South Dakota.
Okay. But Minnesota and Colorado aren't using this technology or requiring it yet?
Not yet.
All right. Okay. Go ahead.
Just in the event, I don't see any names that I recognize, but if someone from the media is on,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if this was mentioned and I missed it when I was taking notes or whatever, but *9, Steve, then is that their virtual hand raise? Okay. Just, I don't know that anyone is, but just in the event someone
is
listening in.
All right. So Steve will bring you on board if you've got questions from the media. You're not seeing any. Okay. Okay, I think we'll move on. Thank you, XL, Dave and team. We appreciate your guys' good presentation. And then the next person is Tom Vinson from AWIA, which is soon to be a different name, I believe.
Hey there, this is Tom. Can you all hear me okay?
Yes, we can, Tom.
Yeah, so we are, you're correct, Commissioner, we are merging into American Clean Power starting January 1st.
Okay.
I wanted to take a minute to respond to a couple of the questions that came up earlier and build on a couple of Chris's answers, and then just have one comment. So first, in terms of the how the systems work, the FAA requirement is that an ADLS system be able to detect aircraft at 3 statutory miles, which is like 4.8 kilometers, and up to 1,000 feet above the tallest turbine. So Chris indicated their system can detect at 3.5 at roughly 2,500 feet. So that would be going beyond the FAA requirements. With respect to weather, because of that FAA requirement, if the system cannot see that far for some reason or another because of fog or blizzard conditions or some other weather system, then it would default to having the lights on, which again is consistent with the FAA requirements. Mm. And then my comment was, you know, related to, and Commissioner, you referred to potential legislative discussion. I think related to the potential for waiver or extension language, I guess I would encourage you all to consider a waiver authority that also includes instances where the FAA objects to the installation on of ADLS on particular wind farms or on turbines within a wind farm. Because even though ADLS systems are approved by the FAA, individual systems are certified, that is, the FAA still has to approve their installations on individual wind farms and turbines. And they may, because of proximity to air traffic or military facilities or some other reason, they may say on certain turbines within the wind farm that the FAA's view is ADLS should not be allowed. So I'm not sure if the technical and economic feasibility language and the potential legislative fixes is intended to cover instances where developers are getting different messages from, say, the state versus FAA. So I'd raise that. And similarly, as you know, the 20th Air Force has raised concerns about use of ADLS systems in proximity to intercontinental ballistic missile launch facilities. So I would also suggest that if technical reasons is not currently envisioned as applying to those types of situations, that it be either clarified or interpreted to apply to those situations so that we could be collaborative with the 20th Air Force on the lighting questions. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tom. Yeah, we've talked a lot about the waiver language this fall and have included a proposal in our pre-filed bills to address that. Does anyone have any questions for Tom?
I do.
Go ahead, Randy.
Tom, I was making some other notes, and I didn't catch your last name, first of all.
Sure. It's Vincent, V as in Victor, I-N-S-O-N. And I am the Vice President for Policy and Regulatory Affairs at the American Wind Energy Association.
And then, thank you. And my other question is, you seem to have really good familiarity with FAA stuff. So what is your thoughts on the likelihood of them approving the dimming technology anytime soon?
Good question. And I think the last time I talked to Jim Patterson, who's the FAA lead on that, it's probably been 2 or 3 months ago. They did not at that time have any revisions from vendors that were in front of them for consideration. So as I think you know, they did some field testing at wind farms in Oklahoma, I guess probably 18 months ago or more at this point, and the FAA was not satisfied with the performance of the system that they tested in terms of its visibility to pilots in the air. And so they made some recommendations to the vendors about potential tweaks that they could make to improve the visibility. And of course, the trade-off is if you're improving the visibility by changing the intensity of the lights to make it more intense rather than more dim, that is a trade-off with visibility for the community as well. And so to my knowledge, the vendors have not come back to the FAA with any revised systems yet to say, can you field test this? But in the meantime, the FAA has been considering what sort of performance requirements they would want to write for light dimming systems, such as the 3 nautical mile and 1,000 foot one that they have for ADLS. And they have been doing their own testing in their own lab with different shapes of lights, different intensity of lights, and some other things to try to advance the question. But my sense is, it's certainly not weeks, I'm not sure if it's months or longer.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great information, Tom. Just to confirm, so you said that as of what date, the FAA doesn't have a system that is has reapplied, a light dimming system that's reapplied, to your knowledge?
I can get you the specific date. It was, roughly 3 months ago, but I can get you a specific date if you'd like.
Okay. And so if a new one applies, it would take, then they have to go through the field testing, and then what else is involved in the FAA approval? How long do you, that seems to me like we're quite a ways away from approving a light dimming solution.
Yeah, so the field tests that the FAA originally did were to try to inform their effort to write performance requirements. In other words, how intense do the lights need to be? And the original system they tested had sort of 3 different intensity levels that could step down over time depending on what the environmental conditions were. And so I think the first thing they have to do is write the performance requirements. And it is likely that if a vendor comes back to them with a tweaked product, that they would want to do field tests again to inform their performance requirements. And they have to have those performance requirements done before they can certify individual systems as meeting those performance requirements. So that's kind of the 2 steps. They figure out what a system needs to do in order to satisfy the FAA's statutory obligations for air safety, et cetera. And then they need to test individual systems and certify those that meet the performance requirements. And then they're available for companies to use on wind farms. In terms of how long that could take, I think it depends on the performance of the systems, and it depends on the priority that the FAA places on that work, vis-a-vis the other work that Jim Patterson and others at the FAA have on their plate. I think the wind industry, we included, have been talking to the FAA about this for some time and are encouraging them to move forward.
All right. And are you aware if this type of technology has already been approved in Canada?
It has been approved in other countries. I believe Canada is one of them, as well as some countries in Europe. But, from the FAA's perspective, that they obviously want to test it for their own purposes and against their own regulations, so they don't necessarily think that its approval elsewhere is particularly determinative of what they're going to do.
I see. And are you do you have any feedback from its use in other places? And effectiveness?
I personally do not know.
Okay. All right. And then my final question is, I can't tell if that's a virtual background, but it looks dangerously close to a palm tree over your left shoulder. And
it is only the single indoor houseplant that I've been able to keep alive.
Oh. You look like you're outside with the palm tree in the background. I was going to say you clearly aren't aware of rules the commission has passed that disallow participation from beaches.
I'm actually in very, very cold Maryland suburbs of D.C.
Oh. Right.
Unless you're a commissioner.
Yeah. All right.
One more back here.
Randy has a question, a serious question, I believe.
It is. I'm not very familiar with the FAA. Is that an agency that involves, appointments from presidential administration where it could be presumed that there's going to be kind of delays in anything happening for a while? Or is that something that just goes on regardless of the politics of the nation? I'm just wondering what the chances even are of any decisions coming out in the next few months.
Yeah, so the FAA is a part of the Department of Transportation. So the Secretary of Transportation will be a presidential appointee, but most of the positions within the FAA are career positions, and the folks that are in the decision-making line for something like the light mitigation or their lighting and market advisory circular more generally, those are generally career decisions. So I don't think that any change on the political environment on the federal side would change the timing necessarily of that particular effort.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? Okay, our reporter from the local paper, Bismarck Tribune, has a question. Her name is Amy Sisk.
Hi, Tom. This might be better directed to one of the developers, but I'll ask you in case you know. Do you happen to have a feel for, on average, how much an ADLS system costs?
I do not, sorry.
Do you at all have a sense, though? Is it in the like tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars?
I would hate to hazard a guess because I honestly am not sure.
Okay, that's all right.
I see that Dave Cedarquist is still on the phone, and so we could ask Dave or Jamie or Julie Volk from NextAir is on. I can't see who else.
I know I'd have to defer to Jamie on that. But
Steve, can you scroll down and get on the expense?
Hello, this is Julie Volk from NextAir. And I'm not able to give you precise number, but are you guys able to hear me?
Yeah, there's a little bit of an echo.
Okay, I'm getting a little feedback. We've installed a number of systems in North Dakota, as my colleague Kozlowski mentioned earlier. And from a ballpark number, I'm going to say the projects are definitely hundreds of thousands of dollars, so six figures to over $1 million at each site. There's a lot of variables that are involved depending on how many wind turbines, do you need more than one radar, are you able to share radars across sites if they're close together. So there's just a lot of variables that go into it.
Great. Hey, thank you
this
for
that.
This
is Dave Cedarquist. I was just provided some information from one of our subject experts. They said about $1 million per system. So just another number there for you.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right. I think we've worked through the list of folks who let us know that they wanted to share some information, but I will open it up to others who have been monitoring and have experience that they'd like to share. If there's anybody else on the line that would like to provide some information and experience, we'd be happy to hear from you. Not seeing anybody jumping in. Does anyone? Oh, we've got a hand raise. Okay.
Hi, Commissioner. This is Molly Smith.
Hi, Molly.
Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that South Dakota PUC staff is also monitoring ADLS systems and how they're performing. So to the extent that you'll want to work cooperatively with the South Dakota PUC, you might be able to get additional information that way as well.
Very good. That's good to know. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
All right. Anybody else? Any other questions? All righty. Well, everybody, thank you for taking time today to share your experiences with us. It's an ongoing discussion. We'll keep monitoring these and look forward to continually trying to improve the performance and work with the companies as best as possible to make the best use out of this technology moving forward. So thanks, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.